maybe to start off, yes, I do have kids. I've got four of them. In fact, my wife is also originally from a place from Swaziland. So it's quite an interesting journey. I've been in Johannesburg for the last 20 years, both in terms of my tertiary education and my working career. And as honorable members would see from my CV, I spent a large part of my career in the accounting and the auditing profession. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. Now, we are going to allow ordinary members who pose questions to yourselves there. And we will ask Ms. Honorable Spies to please come forward and raise the question, please, Honorable Member. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Khan. Mr. Khan, it is commonly known that the Auditor General's office is a Chapter 9 institution, an institution that is viewed as extremely important because it ensures that fiscal management and controls are in place. And obviously, as Parliament, we as members of Parliament view that institution as extremely important. In the light of that office being a reputable institution for over 100 years since its inception, amendments to its founding legislation, what do you think should be the critical focus areas for the next decade?
Thank you very much, Honourable Spies. Can Mr. Khan please respond to the question? Or what do you say?
Thank you, Honourable Spies. The Auditor General has enormous strengths. I think we've seen in the past the integrity of the reporting both to Parliament and to decision makers like the Executive. It's really about building on those strengths and building on that legacy. The Auditor General's mandate comes directly from the Constitution, and the Constitution is quite clear that the mandate is around auditing and reporting to Parliament. Their function has been augmented by the recent amendments to the Public Audit Act, and this gives the Auditor General a lot more in terms of the tools that it can utilize in managing and overseeing public finances. From my observations, I think where we would want to see the state going forward is that over a period of time and being in a very public finance role, we need to move the state from being very compliance-driven to more performance-driven. And I'd like to illustrate that maybe using a very simple example. In my early years as a CFO, a request came before me for the procurement of a fridge, and the amount on that request was 15,000 rand. And I called the head of supply chain, and I showed him a newspaper pamphlet indicating that the price of this fridge is nothing more than 5,000 rand. His response was that we have followed a very open process. We, in accordance with the procurement rules, and this is the outcome of that procurement process. So from my observation and from my experience, we have to fundamentally move the state from being very compliance-driven to more performance management-driven. And the Auditor General has a huge role in actually driving the state, because what we would want to see is the state being more a capable developmental state, because that's where we want to see the future of South Africa. And what I would like to see from the Auditor General and what the Auditor General can use is something called a performance audit. Performance audit is something that's within their mandate. It's one of the tools that have been given to them. But what we've seen, and in my studies of other audit offices globally, you can see that the tool of performance audit is used a lot more, or have been integrated a lot more as part of the regularity audit function. And in a performance audit, you're not checking purely compliance, but you're actually checking whether the objectives of the state is being met, the goals of the state are being met. And here you're actually looking at value for money. And normally we hear about the three E's. It's around economy, effectiveness, and efficiency. And literally we're looking at economy, whether we're buying the right product at the right price and the right quality. Efficiency is the relationship between inputs and outputs. And effectiveness is whether we were achieving the objectives. In the more mature environments around the world, we've seen that there's a strong drive towards performance auditing. It's because that is where we see the value of audit. And that can literally change the behavior of numerous programs within the state. There's also been a shift towards something called the five E's, which is it's an alternative model. It's also looking at areas around equity, which is around the fairness, and also looking at the environment, because the environment is a big part of where we live in. So we can use different tools within the Auditor General's toolbox to actually make a difference, rather than it being purely a compliance type of audit. Technology is another key lever, and between technology and also investigations, those elements can literally be brought into a regularity audit, and these tools can literally enhance the value proposition of an audit. So within the next 100 years, where I'd like to see the Auditor General and how it's positioned, I think changing fundamentally the mindset of the state from being very compliance-driven to performance management-driven. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. I will now give over to Honorable Vessels for him to pose his question. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Khan. South Africa is facing severe challenges, and even prior to COVID-19, we have faced severe challenges and are facing them still. And it has just been enhanced and made worse by the pandemic and by COVID-19. What and how do you see the role of the Auditor General to address some of these challenges and to strengthen democracy in South Africa? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Vansel. Go back to Mr. Khan. Thanks.
Thank you for that question. From my experience, auditing and the Auditor General plays a key role in building a capable state. And what do I mean by a capable state? A state that is free of corruption and a state that is delivering on its constitutional mandate. Fraud, corruption, mismanagement of funds extracts an enormous amount from this economy. We have seen that there have been numerous studies, both locally and abroad, trying to quantify this cost of corruption on the economy. And we've seen that if we don't tackle this purge of corruption, it's going to really have a huge burden on this economy. What we've seen as well is that the challenges that we are facing is not unique to South Africa. Other audit offices globally are facing very similar challenges like fraud, corruption, and mismanagement of funds. And what those offices have done is they've used the tools that are available to them to actually make a difference and make a dent in some of these challenges we are facing. As I've indicated before, performance audit is a very useful tool in looking at how programs can be better better enhanced to drive the goals of the state. What for me, I think the key thing is around how do we utilize the tools that are available within the audit office. These tools come directly from the Constitution and have been further enhanced by the amendments to the Public Audit Act. So in responding to that question, I would say, for number one, technology and data can be utilized a lot more in the audit office. As we've seen in the digital world, big data comes with enormous analytical and comes with a large number of analytical strengths, and with this data comes power. We've witnessed that the Auditor General is one of the biggest aggregators of data in the state. And on a daily basis, auditors go into the field and they collect huge amounts of data as part of their audit work. And this data can provide very useful insights, both to Parliament, to the decision makers like the executives, but also to the audit teams. So this is a very important tool, because with technology, and as we've seen in the digital world, technology is a lever to progress. The second one is around the investigations teams. So the Auditor General has an investigation unit, and I would say that we need to possibly increase the 5% of resources that's been allocated to the investigations unit. We need to make the Auditor General as strong as a player like other investigative units in the state. The third element is around the new powers. As part of the new powers, the Auditor General can refer any material irregularities detected to investigative agencies. So these are the powers and these are the tools that the Auditor General can utilize to address some of the shortcomings we've seen in the past and some of the shortcomings we've seen currently during the pandemic. It's really about repositioning and using these tools to make a change to some of the challenges we are currently facing. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Khan. Thank you for your response. I'm giving over to Honorable Singh for him to
Thank
pose
you.
His question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon, Mr. Khan. It's good to see a KwaZulu-Natal and a banana boy amongst us. I think the only one. Not that it's going to influence my thinking in any way for my colleagues. I know Glencoe very well. Yeah, Mr. Khan, you know, auditing is a noble profession. So we all think. Yet, amongst the auditors and some firms of auditors, there are those that are ignoble or dishonorable. And I think that became evident recently during the findings of some of the audit companies and the way they conducted themselves in the Zondo Commission and, you know, in reports to SOEs. Now, the Office of the Auditor General being the largest employer of CAs in the country, what influence, if you are appointed Auditor General, do you think that the AG can have on restoring trust and confidence, public trust and confidence in the profession? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Singh. Mr. Khan.
Thank you for the question. The challenges in the profession are quite well known, and I think it comes about there being a huge expectation gap between what the public wants and what the auditors are actually doing. As the public has become more and more aware of fraud, both in the private sector and in the public sector, there's been a continuous call for auditors to actually be the partners to actually address and detect these issues. The Auditor General, in my opinion, can play a much bigger role. In fact, I would say that the Auditor General can play as big as a role as some of the, like the Regulatory Board of Auditors, in actually regulating the profession. The challenges literally comes around there being certain instances of integrity, independence being breached. It has come around that the auditors have not duly completed their assignments with the necessary professional skepticism. And I think it comes down to the Auditor General, who's possibly the biggest employer of auditors in the state, because the Auditor General has a very significant lever. The Auditor General, on an annual basis, contracts out close to 600 million rand to audit firms. And I think the Auditor General can use such levers to ensure that audit firms, big or small, are compliant with the basic principles of being an auditor, that is independent, impartial, and objective. So I think for me, the Auditor General can really play a huge role, as much as we have a regulator, in actually regulating the auditors and the profession as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Khan. That makes us to move from Honorable Singh to Honorable de Villiers. Can you please pose your question, Honorable de Villiers, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Ms. Khan. You've already touched on the importance of the independence of the Auditor General. And just following on what my colleague has just asked you, I would like to say, if it is so important that the Auditor General's office must be independent, what would you do to safeguard this position if you were to become the new Auditor General? How would you essentially protect the office of the AG against something like state capture or losing or being captured in any form?
Thank you very much, Honorable de Villiers. Can you go to Mr. Khan? Can you please respond? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Honorable de Villiers. If you look globally at other audit offices, the cornerstone of their very existence is independence and impartiality. And as the Auditor General, or the South African Auditor General, we have been quite fortunate that these principles are entrenched in our constitution. And literally what it means is that the Auditor General, when it comes to independence and impartiality, it's only subject to the constitution and the laws of the country. It cannot be answerable to anyone else. From my observations, the Auditor General plays a very important role in holding the executive accountable. And the only way it can do this is through being independent. And independence means independent in fact and in appearance. The Auditor General has a fundamental compact with the South African citizens and public, and not with the government of the day. And the reason why I say that is that it being a constitutional institution, it's completely independent from the government of the day. In order for us to continuously ensure that this noble office continues in this journey, we need to ensure that all of us, both as the public, as a parliament, and as all role players, we need to ensure that this is protected. So, from a parliamentary perspective, I think the honourable members play a huge, important role in ensuring that the Auditor General is completely independent. But I think from an Auditor General's office itself, there are certain requirements that can be, there are certain requirements that's at play. Number one, it's the policies and procedures that's within the office to ensure that all the auditors that come into the system are free of any political affiliation, free of any conflict of interest, and literally they are able to do and perform the functions of the audit office. Secondly, on each audit assignment, there is something called a conflict of interest, where for every individual client, the Auditor General has to indicate whether there's any conflict of interest, whether if there's a familiarity threat, whether there's any family members working in the company that the auditor is auditing. But those are the systems that can be put in place within the Auditor General's office, both as an office and also on each engagement. As a last point, I would say that another way of dealing with this is to ensure that there's rotations amongst the audit teams that are doing audit assignments. You'll also see in the broader profession that there's something called mandatory rotations. So even as an audit firm, you cannot audit a client for many years. The regulator, the Independent Regulatory Board of Auditors, are now forcing that after a certain number of years, the auditors must be rotated so that any threats like independence will be dealt with by a change of auditors. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan, for your response. We'll go now over to Honorable Somyo for you to pose your questions there. Thank you, Honorable Somyo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mr. Khan. as part of my question, I know that you would probably be worried, as many South Africans are, that the country, during the time when it's experiencing hardship which has been caused by the pandemic, COVID-19, the state has made it that there should be some intervention made to save the lives and to impact on the available a livelihood, to ensure that our own people would be taken out of areas which are bringing them to stark poverty. While that has been the case, there's been others who have seen time to benefit individually or severally through corruption and fraud, where huge amounts through the processes of procurement were lost out of the state coffers. As the Auditor General, your own practice through your own conduct in terms of the current audits, you come at the tail end of such a situation. But the urgency is for all state institutions, inclusive of Chapter 9 institutions, to intervene currently to fight this kind of a scourge. What do you think could be so seminal in dealing with such a scenario if you were fortunate to be appointed as the Auditor General, in acting now without waiting for a closure of the financial year? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Somyo. I then go back to Mr. Singh. I'm sorry to Mr. Khan. So is the KZN guys now. No, thank you. My apologies. Mr. Khan, can you please come to respond, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Honorable Somyo, for the question. COVID-19, as we've seen, has placed an enormous demand on most governments, not just the South African government, but worldwide. It's something very real, and I'm sure most of us have experienced either a loss in some kind or another. It's number one, dealing with the health response, but linked to that is also the economic response. And what we've seen come to the fore is that there's been numerous allegations across the board. What we need to ensure is that every rand of taxpayers' money is spent in a constitutionally sound manner and in accordance with the laws of our country. At the heart of this response, in most governments, is procurement. And procurement is possibly one of is the area which is most prone to manipulation and fraud. And the question that Honorable Somio is posing is about how do we proactively deal with that? As an audit office, it will be too late when the president has already announced a 500 billion rand package to deal as part of the economic response and the health response. It would be too late coming a year down the line to say that these are the things that have gone or could have gone wrong or have gone wrong. It's all about using the tools that the audit office has to bring out insights that can help parliament, that can help the decision makers to ensure that our response to the pandemic reaches its intended target. And within this toolbox of the Auditor General, there are numerous ways to address this. And the first one is risk assessments. So the Auditor General can do these risk assessments quite early on, just to understand the systems that are being used to actually procure these services and whether these systems are fit and proper. The Auditor General, through these risk assessments, can identify the type of preventative and deterrent controls that can be implemented to ensure that the monies are being spent in a constitutionally sound manner. As an audit office, they are quite privileged in the sense that they've got a lot of the state's data and they have access to a lot of the state data. And being one of the biggest aggregators of data in the state, they could use that data in a way that could provide very useful insights to the state so that they can proactively deal with some of this. We've seen in other countries the Auditor General's offices playing a huge role as part of this response to the pandemic. There's been numerous guides in some of the other audit offices around some of the basic tools that can be utilized. And this has been predominantly in the procurement space, because one thing that we tend to get wrong as a state is in the area of procurement. And I think the Auditor General, noting that it's independent, it cannot be seen to be formulating any policy on behalf of the state, but it can play a very prominent role in ensuring that this 500 billion package is utilized in a manner that makes a huge dent or makes a huge impact in terms of both our health response and our economic response. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. We'll come to Honorable Peters for her to pose a question. Over to you, Honorable Peters.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Khan. Mr. Khan, what challenges do you anticipate in the implementation of the Public Audit Act amendments and regulations? And what mitigation strategies do you propose, as well as which proactive approaches do you think you will implement to ensure successful implementation of these amendments? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tipu. Over to you, Mr. Khan.
Thank you.
The audit function and the Auditor General's mandates come directly from the Constitution, which has been further enhanced in the Public Audit Act. And what's clear as an audit office, the primary function is to audit and to report to Parliament. With the new amendments comes additional responsibilities. And with these additional responsibilities, it means that the Auditor General would be utilizing its functions and its powers to make certain changes in the behavior within the state. And with this function come pressure from other systems within the state. With the new powers, the biggest risk that I see, and from my experience, is that once the Auditor General enforces implementation around these powers, there's a possibility that there could be numerous judicial challenges around some of the remedial actions that they will be taking. I think it's quite clear that these processes are subject to the Promotion of Administration and Justice Act, and they could be legal challenges around some of these areas. Within the broader Public Audit Act, I think the roles and the functions of the Auditor General are quite clear, and it's all about enforcing and ensuring implementation of these. With regard to the response with these challenges, it's important that whatever is reported by the Auditor General is backed up by adequate supporting documents and evidence, because an audit itself, it's not something that someone thinks of and just decides to write an audit finding. Every audit finding is backed up by substantive audit evidence. So should there be any challenges in implementing these new powers, they need to have a system where all the decisions that are taken across the board is backed up by adequate evidence, and the conclusions around this is quite important. The other one that in addressing this possible challenge would be something within what we call the right of response. It's important that in raising or in detecting and raising any material irregularities, that the accounting officers and the executive are given adequate and ample opportunities to respond. Because you don't want to get to a situation where come down the line and they would say that they weren't given an opportunity, because that is where the fairness in the process comes in. So to summarize, Honorable Peters, I would say the two things to address the challenges around the implementation of the new powers would be around ensuring that whatever decisions are taken, it's backed up by adequate evidence, and in terms of the fairness of the process, that the other party is given ample opportunity to respond to those material irregularities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. It will take us to Honorable Morolong for him to pose his question. Over to you, Honorable Morolong.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon, Mr. Khan. You know, given the complex nature of the challenges that confront our SOEs and generally the debilitating state of our SOEs, there's been a growing position that the Auditor General must take full charge of auditing all Section 2 state-owned enterprises. Do you concur with this position? And if so, why? And if not, why?
Thank you, Honorable Morolong. Can you give Mr. Khan an opportunity to respond to the question? Over to you, sir.
Thank you for the question. My response would be yes. In my experience, the audit office can play a very key role in building what I call a capable state. And in a capable state, I mean a state that's free of corruption and a state that is delivering on its constitutional mandate. And the state-owned companies play a critical role as part of this capable state. As a state, we spend close to 800 billion rand a year on goods and services, meaning that we utilize the services of the private sector in delivering in our mandate. And out of that 800 billion rand, more than 50% of that procurement spend come from state-owned companies. So it's extremely important that those levers of the state, like procurement, is utilized in a way that can drive economic growth. If we see the manner in which the Auditor General has, over the last 10 years or so, has sort of utilized this tool to promote public confidence, to promote clean administrations, this tool has largely, we've seen a difference. You know, in some years you'll see the number of clean audits increasing. Some years it goes down, but the audit office has built a capability in auditing the public sector. The SOC has been such a critical part of this broader state. I would think it is of utmost importance that the Auditor General does audit it. And I think long term, the Auditor General will need to build capabilities in understanding how these state-owned companies work. So in responding to it, I would say yes. I would say there needs to be a plan to take over these audits. And this plan would entail two areas. Number one, building capabilities through the understanding of the businesses of these state-owned companies. And number two is the second part would be the plan looking around whether the office has adequate capacity to actually take on these state-owned companies. As a last element as well, it's just from a risk profile, whether the Auditor General can actually service and respond to the requirements of a state-owned company. So those, as part of a broad plan, they would have to look at those elements. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. Takes us to Honorable Buthelezi for him to pose his question. Over to you, Honorable Buthelezi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Khan. There's a small town called Dandi. That's where I did my standard 6, 4 years before you were born. let me start on the previous question. That what difference would it make whether we insource the auditing of all the SOEs? Because even now there's a lot of work that the AG also gives out to these private auditing firms. But having that, I would like you to deal with that. And as you would know, you would have heard that auditors are currently experiencing resistance and threats during audit periods in some instances. But I just wanted to personalize this and check whether as an auditor you have experienced such resistance before. If the answer is yes, how did you deal with it? If the answer is no, create a scenario where there is a resistance and share with this committee how you deal with that threat. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Buthelezi. Can we give over to Honorable Khan? Are you also Honorable Mr. Khan? Okay.
Thank you, Madam.
Can we give over to Mr. Khan then?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Honorable Buthelezi, for the question. Dundee is 5 kilometres from Glencoe, so it's a very close distance. And we, the question around contracting and outsourcing work, I think, looking at the risk profile of the state, you would want the Auditor General, as the Supreme Audit Office, to take on the responsibility of the audits of the state-owned companies. As much as it's outsourced and there are private sector firms auditing it at the moment, you would want to ensure, and just not just as Parliament, but also as the South African public, would want to ensure that those risks and those failures coming out of the state-owned companies are addressed by the most powerful office in the country. So it's about providing that comfort and also closing that that audit expectation gap between the South African public within the audit environment. And in saying that, it does not mean that those audit firms are not capable or do not have the competency to deal with those audits. It's merely about addressing the broader risks of the state. With regard to threats and resistance, as honourable members would have seen, I've spent a large part of my career at the Auditor General's office, and my subsequent experience has been in the management of state funds. And I've literally played on both sides. And in my experience, when you raise an audit finding, as much as an auditor comes in, and you know, you cannot, you know, the Auditor General should never be seen as an enemy of the state. It's there to be, it's there to serve. It's there to serve and to aid Parliament, but also to provide comfort to the broader South African public. In carrying out its function, it needs to ensure that it's fully independent, and in dealing with auditees, there's in every scenario, you're always bound to find a situation where you raise a finding and there's disagreement. And the auditing standards are very clear on what is a disagreement. So you can have in audit term, a disagreement, which means that there's a difference between what the auditee says and what the auditor says. And that's something in what the audit standards. Or you could have a fundamental disagreement, is where the two of us literally are not agreeing eye to eye. And this is actually quite common. And the auditing standards both provide guidance on how you actually deal with these disagreements. If the disagreement is material, you communicate that in a professional manner to your client. If it's not material, you also raise the finding, but deal with it as part of your audit conclusions. What we've seen, and in the recent past that there's been numerous physical threats. So these are not disagreements in what we call in order terms, but they are disagreements to the point where there are physical threats and resistance coming to these teams. And as an audit office, it's a very difficult thing to deal with, because as auditors, you shouldn't be, we are not trained, or auditors are not trained to go into an environment and be threatened and asked to make changes to audit findings, because it takes away that independence, it takes away that professional competence. So as a response to that, the Auditor General will have to do continuous risk assessments to ensure that, number one, the safety of their teams are addressed, because you cannot put an auditor or an employee's life at risk. Secondly, there should be a number of programs within the audit office around wellness, employee wellness, because it's quite important that every auditor that goes out into the field have the right frame of mind, because you cannot go into an environment scared or feel threatened, because that takes away that independence, that impartiality, because the very foundations of what the Auditor General is about, it's about independence and impartiality. And impartiality means performing your functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. So it's about the audit office putting together some programs to actually deal with this on a day-to-day basis. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. That takes us now to Honorable Mende for her to pose a question to yourself. Honorable Mende, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Khan. On your opening remarks, you mentioned that you would love to see Auditor General in the next decade having to perform the full scope of auditing, which then includes performance audits. So currently that is not happening. Why do you think it's not happening? Why? What challenges do you think the Auditor General is facing? Also, what would you do as an Auditor General to ensure that the full scope is undertaken? So the new office, as with you as an occupant, will conduct full scope without hindrance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mente, for the question. Go back to Mr. Khan to respond to the question, please, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Honorable Mente, for that question. Performance audit is one of the tools that have been given to the Auditor General, and with the new amendments, it actually has been given a lot more prominence as an audit product that the Auditor General can utilize as part of its broad services. We've seen, or the Auditor General, from my observation, has not utilized this function or this tool to its fullest at this point in time. I think the challenges that's being brought to the floor, it's mainly around the basic compliance and accounting matters. So as environments become a lot more mature, in the sense that audit departments, the executives and all decision makers are able to transition and implement systems that address the fundamental challenges at the moment, which is mainly around accounting and compliance, would you then see a change in the auditor responding to it? Because at the moment, the auditor is responding to a particular risk in the audit environment. they're dealing with risk around skills around accounting, and at the moment it's the basic accounting skills that are not coming and are not being and those principles are not being adhered to. In looking long term, I think as the environment matures, performance audit can be an extremely useful tool, because it will then be able to assess whether the programs and the policies and the legislations coming through are addressing the very fundamental goals that we've set ourselves as a state. And until that maturity comes in, we would then be able to see a change in the audit shift. South Africa, like many other developing countries, their primary focus at the moment is mainly around regularity audits. But long term, like we've seen in a lot of the other mature environments globally, performance audit plays a huge tool. And that is where you actually see the value add that an audit office can bring, which is through performance audits. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. Now we'll go to Honorable Lagude, who is on the platform. She will then ask her questions. It's your time, Honorable Lagude, the Deputy Chief Whip. Can you please raise your question, ma'am?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Khan. Mr. Khan, I'll take you back to the Holy Book, where it tells us that our Lord Jesus Christ was tempted by the devil for 40 days and 40 nights. Fortunately, because he's the Son of God, he resisted those temptations.
Can you please just hold there? We can't hear you, unfortunately. The technicians are trying to make sure that you are not as audible, Honorable Lagude. Apologies for that. Can the technicians please assist in that regard? Are we fine now? Are you sure? Can we allow her to come in?
Can you hear me now, Chairperson?
Yes, we can hear you vividly now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Khan. I was saying that I'll take Mr. Khan to the Holy Book, which tells us that our Lord Jesus Christ was tempted for 40 days and 40 nights by the devil, and he resisted those temptations. Honorable Chairperson, the reason I'm bringing this in is that the people leading those various units, business units in the Auditor General's office are not immune to temptations. One way or the other, corruptors will try to tempt them. So those various business heads compiled reports that the Auditor General tables in Parliament. So, with the rate of corruption in South Africa and the way people, even those we don't think could be corrupted, are corrupted, how would you ensure that those reports are credible and reliable? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable. Zakude, the Deputy Chief Whip. Can we come back to Mr. Khan for him to please respond? Over to you, Mr. Khan. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Honourable Tlakude for the question. The reference to the Holy Book means that there's no person that's invincible, you know. People can be tempted and can be corrupted. As an audit office and being there for close to 9 years of my career, there has to be very strong systems, policies and procedures to deal with such. Looking at the broader challenges in the profession, we've seen such instances where temptation has come to the fore, and where auditors who were meant to safeguard and provide an independent assessment were found to be corrupt in those instances. As an audit office, the best way to deal with it, it's similar with any risk that is being posed to this environment, is about assessing the risks and putting adequate safeguards in place to deal with this. This will entail policies, procedures, and safeguards as an audit office, but also include safeguards at an engagement level to ensure that there are adequate systems in place to deal with this. The third element will be around the quality assurance processes as an audit office. The Auditor General of South Africa adopts the international standards of auditing. And before a report comes to Parliament, we need to ensure that it's fully compliant with the requirements of those audit standards. And before an audit report is finalized, there are a number of reviews, checks, and balances. So these systems that are in the office and perhaps need to be enhanced will have to deal with the review mechanisms and the quality control around how audits are being finalized to ensure that the Auditor General as an office must report without fear, favor, or prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan, on your responses. We now come back to Honorable Spies for her to put the very last question. Over to you, Honorable Spies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Khan, throughout your interview, you have made reference to the new tools that the Auditor General has received by means of the amendments to the Public Act. And with those new tools comes greater responsibility, but even a greater level of transparency. Now, in most institutions, the participation of stakeholders are very important, and also more so the management of the relationship with those stakeholders. And we have found, and I'm sure you have found in your current job, that sometimes stakeholders can be very demanding. Now, at times, stakeholders demand even conflict with our own ethics and our values, and specifically those of the organization that you work for. And that would also include, obviously, corporate governance principles or standards. So I would like to ask you the following, and it would be 2 points. Can you describe to me how you manage unreasonable stakeholder expectations? And then if you could more specifically indicate to us how you over the years addressed ethical integrity and corporate governance issues in your engagement, including the extent to which you achieve the desired results.
Thank you very much, Honorable Spies, Honorable Spies. It goes on, it doesn't stop, Honorable Spies. My apologies once more. Can we give over to Mr. Khan for him to give us a response on the question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Honorable Spies, for that question. The question around unreasonable stakeholder expectations and how you deal with that, and the question being posed around the new powers of the Auditor General. It's quite important that in any environment, whether it's audit or whether it's a corporate environment, there's always unreasonable expectations. And it's all about how do you as a leader deal with those unreasonable expectations. And perhaps I could maybe just perhaps use some of the or use give an example. Working in the state and working at a national government department, you deal with numerous people and you deal with various people of various with different backgrounds, and there's always something that comes to the fore around whether we are not meeting expectations or whether the service you're providing is not adequate. And my principle and how I deal with this in my environment is it's about criticism comes your way all the time, but it's how you actually respond to that. And for me, it's the way you respond to it and how you improve that, either that relationship or that situation, is what makes it a better leader. Criticism is not bad always. It allows you to improve as an individual, but in a corporate environment, it allows you to improve systems. And in any environment, those are the elements that allows for continuous improvement in the broader system. With regard to the second part of the question around the ethical and the corporate governance challenges, it's quite important that, especially being in the public service, that all public servants display the highest values of ethics, because it's all about ensuring that that one rand of taxpayers' money is utilized in a manner that is in accordance with the constitutional mandate, but it also meets the expectation of the South African public. And in that environment, you need to ensure that these governance structures that deal with such are in place, but not only that they're in place, they are working and addressing the risks and challenges being faced by the entity. In the environment that I am in, we disperse a lot of incentives and grants to the private sector. And it's also an area which could be, if not managed, be prone to manipulation. And what we've done as a collective and as the leadership, we've implemented independent adjudication structures that actually assesses every application that comes into the system. And the reason for doing this is that we want to ensure that every application is assessed with its own merits, but also it meets the requirements of the improvement in the broader system. With regard to the second part of the question around the ethical and the corporate governance challenges, it's quite important that, especially being in the public service, that all public servants display the highest values of ethics. Because it's all about ensuring that that one rand of taxpayers' money is utilized in a manner that is in accordance with the constitutional mandate, but it also meets the expectation of the South African public. And in that environment, you need to ensure that these governance structures that deal with such are in place. But not only that they're in place, they are working and addressing the risks and challenges being faced by the entity. In the environment that I am in, we disperse a lot of incentives and grants to the private sector. And it's also an area which could be, if it's not managed, be prone to manipulation. And what we've done as a collective and as the leadership, we've implemented independent adjudication structures that actually assesses every application that comes into that comes into the system. And the reason for doing this is that we want to ensure that every application is assessed with its own merits, but also it meets the requirements of the support that we are providing to those companies. So in responding to those questions, both in terms of the first one around the unreasonable expectations, it's more the response on how you actually deal with that to make the system a better place. And with regard to the ethical and the corporate governance challenges, that's very real, but it's all about ensuring that the proper governance structures are in place to actually deal with those risks and challenges. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khan. That was the last question. Let me take the opportunity to thank you for having been